information you need now. News Radio 560 KPQ.
This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Agenda. 15 minutes past noon, 56 degrees outside in Wenatchee Town. Consider this. Today, a broadcast message from the enemy of the people. Me, a mere disc jockey, you know, the people's foe. Even here in safe, sane, isolated, lovable Wenatchee, we are not all right. We're not okay. We are not the prosperous, shining effigy on the hill. We should be, but we have fallen so far as to successfully mix two things that do not mix. The traditional pageantry associated with the World Series and the lowest form of violent, marginal existence. We slaughter blacks in a Kroger store because the hateful gunman couldn't gain access to the black church that he intended to strafe with gunfire. This news is overshadowed by Hollywood celebrities watching the Dodgers lose. We mail dozens of pipe bombs to political and social notables and then wonder if Manny Machado can snap out of his slump or at least do something with his hair. We witness the resurrection of anti-Semitic hate talk and murder that barely distracts the nation bemoaning the Dodger bullpen. We shoot up stores, we assemble pipe bombs, we murder elderly Jews in their synagogue, while in Kentucky, a father dresses as an SS officer while his six-year-old son goes as Adolf Hitler for a fun American Main Street Hollywood party. He says he wishes he hadn't did it, but he's a history buff and the rest of us simply don't understand. And perhaps we don't. But perhaps we do. So we hold violent rallies, we have torchlight parades and marches, we broadcast hate media, we honor white supremacy, all to make us feel better about ourselves and our nation. You don't have to go very far down the dial to discover that the blacks asked for it. Robert De Niro asked for it. The Jews have always asked for it. In fact, they might have done these terrible things to themselves just to gain notoriety. That's what the blacks and the Hollywood types and the Jews do. We know this. And we, the hostile people of Angrytown, have responded in kind with a brand of nationalism best remembered from those long-lost glory days bathed in the searchlights of Bohemia. No, we're not right. We're not even close. But if you go to the correct rally and tune into the correct channel, you might think that things have never been better. Are they indeed? Well, if that's true, it shouldn't hurt this much to review the dark deeds of our fellow countrymen, bent on anger and violence and bitter self-justification. It has become mainstream. And to try and put this into some sort of focus, we go to Pittsburgh now, and our friend and correspondent, New York Vinny, reporting from his adopted city where the mighty Steelers now wear the Star of David on their helmets. They battled the Blitz on the field and the ugliest form of hatred in the leafy neighborhoods of Pennsylvania. New York Vinny, welcome to KPQ once again.
Thanks, Michael.
You had yourself quite a weekend. I followed you on Facebook. You were all over the demonstrations and the terrible events that happened right in your neighborhood.
Yeah, really just about 6 miles away from where I live, in a neighborhood that I'm very, very familiar with. It's a neighborhood where a lot of people go shopping. It's just a couple of blocks away from where the shooting was, a lot of stores, a lot of different restaurants. My shoe store is around the block. You know, I got to get them big clodhopper shoes for my big clodhopper feet. And the shoe store I go to is around the block. My favorite Chinese restaurant, just another block away from where this all happened on Saturday morning. Everybody getting ready for the Pitt game and the Steeler game and the other games they play on the weekend, the lovable kind of love thy neighbor essence of Pittsburgh was shattered. Once again, as so many places have done in this country with the sound of gunfire.
Later on, after things began to settle down a little bit, there were a number of, I won't call them rallies, but gatherings of people in support of what had happened there in that neighborhood. In fact, I saw you with a picture of the governor.
Yeah, obviously you couldn't get very close early on, but as the day progressed, and this is the kind of stuff that gives me real hope, Michael. As the day progressed, local students from Allardyce High School, which is the closest high school, public school, to the synagogue, put it out on social media that they wanted the people to show up for a vigil as close as you could get to the synagogue, maybe about, two, three blocks away from the scene of this horrific thing. The bodies hadn't yet been removed from the synagogue when this vigil was taking place. So at 6 o'clock on Saturday night, several thousand people converged on this corner in front of the church that's there, the Presbyterian Church. The people from Dunkin' Donuts put up their boxes of donuts and flasks of coffee, and the chai tea place on the corner brought out flasks of chai tea to keep everybody warm on a rainy night. And we just all stood there in shock and sang songs. The Jewish community came out and led songs in, Jewish folk songs, songs of hope, songs of peace. And it was just something where everybody had to get together. You couldn't believe that this would happen here, but yet it did. And you couldn't be alone. You had to be with other people, other people that felt the same way you did. And on Saturday night, that's what happened. The governor showed up. The mayor showed up. A number of other city officials, county officials, state officials showed up. Not to politicize it. No political speeches. Just to pray and to light a candle and to hold a candle for a few minutes and to sing some songs of healing for people that were slaughtered, that were in their 90s and 80s and 70s and 60s, Michael.
What did the people say quietly in the crowd? I know there's not much you can say after it's all been said and all the conclusions have been reached by people on both sides of the issue. What were the folks of Pittsburgh saying to themselves and to you?
People weren't talking a lot. People were just holding candles, singing songs, looking at each other in stunned disbelief. It was one of the quietest crowds of that size I think I had ever been in. It was amazing that I think, really, Michael, that eyes told more of the story, that if you looked into people's eyes, you saw that, you know, there's that squint just before you start to cry. You're not crying, but you're almost there. You got the tears welling up in your eyes, and you can see you're just about to let it go. And I think that's what I saw more than anything else. Is people with that look in their eyes like they were about to cry, but they just couldn't get the tears out. You know, there were people putting their arms around each other and saying hello. I happened to run into, it was funny, just as I walked up to the corner, I looked to my right, and there's my traffic reporter from the radio station I work at here. We, as if we were meant to come together and just stand there and watch this whole thing take place together. But it was great because it was a friendly person to stand next to somebody I did know, and it made it feel so, so, so much better.
One of the sports community in Pittsburgh is so strong. I saw a kid who was getting bread. His yarmulke had a Pittsburgh Pirates P on it. I saw another picture of the Steelers helmets that have been repurposed. You know, they have those three diamond shapes on them, and one of them has been converted into a Star of David. The sports community, as can usually be relied upon in times of trouble, we saw this in Boston, we've seen it in other cities, they led the way in showing the right way to observe this terrible tragedy.
Well, the Steelers held a moment of silence on Sunday before the game. And it truly was a moment of silence. I mean, you know, usually you have those things and some idiot says something, has to scream out something, but it really was truly a moment of silence. You could see the players, who were, a lot of them live, there's players that live in that neighborhood and officials. As a matter of fact, one of the people, that was killed was a former community relations director for the Steelers. So it really did hit home for the Steelers. The Vancouver Canucks, the Penguins were up there on Saturday night, and the Canucks did a moment of silence up in Vancouver for the team. The team has canceled their canceled their Halloween night. They have this Halloween night festivity that they do. They've canceled that, and instead will honor the victims of the shooting on Wednesday night's game, which is Halloween night. So the Penguins have responded. And it was, you know, it was interesting that you mentioned that P, because that yarmulke, which is the, you know, the hat that Jewish people wear when they're inside synagogue or even outside, the rabbi that was holding the service had a P on his yarmulke as well. And there's pictures you can see of them leading him out of the side door of the synagogue, the police, who were spectacular in this thing, Michael. Well, hopefully we can get to that in a second. Leading him out, you can see the P on the side of his yarmulke as the SWAT team is leading him out. So sports do play a very, very big part in and will play a big part in the healing of this city.
The first responders always take the heat. They always take the brunt of the problem. They're always criticized for responding too slowly or not efficiently enough. But the Pittsburgh police really came through as best they could, even though they were outgunned.
Yeah, the first call, I guess, hit. I guess he entered the synagogue at about 10 minutes to 10. The first call came in about 4 minutes later. And he had done most of the damage, I think, by the time the cops had gotten there, because they caught him trying to leave the synagogue. And they forced him by gunfire back into the synagogue. Now, if he'd escaped, who knows how much more havoc and damage and murder and death and injury he would have caused in that neighborhood. But he was able to go right up against them. And, they were able to go right up against him. They ran toward the bullets, ran toward the fire. This guy had an AR-15 assault rifle plus a couple of pistols on him. And they cornered him finally up in the third floor. He shot four cops. They finally cornered him up in the third floor, forced him to surrender after shooting him. The police, and not just the Pittsburgh police, but you had Pittsburgh police, Allegheny County police, you had police from neighboring cities and jurisdictions come in. And they also had, this is very interesting, Michael, they had, for the first time I've ever heard of, doctors who dressed up in SWAT uniforms go in with the police and look at the casualties to see if they could save any of the casualties that were in there, or the police, and crediting it that with why no policemen were killed, because there was a doctor, I guess, on scene with the SWAT team in the synagogue and was able to treat one of the policemen who was shot immediately. I had never heard of that before.
I haven't heard of that either. Extraordinary news, and hats off to the doctor. First rule of medicine, of course, is do no harm, but then after that, you're really, the rules are wide open on how crazy it has to be before you start treating people. And this just shows you that there's one person who took his oath who's true to it.
Yeah, there was actually three of them that they brought in from the emergency room. These are now trained doctors who are trained to respond to these kinds of situations in full SWAT gear. If that doesn't tell you what the world is coming to, my friend, I don't know what will.
A lot of times, Vinny, no matter how horrible the news, after a couple of days, everything blows over. There's a quiet. Some lives are ruined forever, but we push on to the next big story. Often it doesn't take long for a big story to surface. What's Pittsburgh got planned for itself? How's the healing going to continue on the long term? And what do the people there feel about starting the new week which is such a strange history now?
Well, it's very quiet. I know Saturday night and even yesterday, even during the Steelers game, you know, usually the bars are filled with people while the Steelers are on. You know, you can't get tickets, so it's, you know, you go to a bar and watch the game. And the bars were really empty yesterday. There were not a lot of people out, you know, celebrating, reveling, doing those kinds of things that, you know, would say to you, okay, this is a joyous occasion. I know this morning I was out, and people still had that look on their face of shock, of that they really couldn't believe exactly what was going on. It was really, that there's a pall over this city, and there are little instances of where people, you know, here and there are, getting through it, and there's a little bit of laughter here and there. But it's still a very somber, and I think it will be, it's going to be, they say, a week before they can clear that crime scene. And I think at least until that crime scene is cleared, and the funerals are going to be today, tomorrow, Wednesday, as you might know in the Jewish faith, you have to bury the people within a certain amount of time.
And yeah, so the funeral should be the very next day, right?
Right, but I guess with the autopsies, they could do, I think the first funerals are today, if I'm not mistaken. I think the two brothers that were killed are being funeralized this evening. And there's just a sense here that you don't believe that it could happen in a place like this, even though you know very simply that it could. That they had, as a matter of fact, this synagogue had had Homeland Security come in and talk to them about, about security measures. And one of the things that they did is they fixed the doors. The doors couldn't open it on the side doors. They had trouble opening. It's an old building. Well, they had somebody come in and fix the doors, Michael. And you know what? Several people escaped through those doors, older people who might not have been able to open those doors had Homeland Security not gone in there and done an assessment of that building.
What do you think's planned for today and the next couple of days? Any more vigils?
Yeah, there was a big vigil last night. There's another vigil. I think there's going to be vigils probably every night until that crime scene is cleared, which they say will at the earliest will be Friday. I think the people are just, getting in their cars and going down there and laying flowers. There's a huge, I'm sure you've seen it in the paper or on TV, the large memorial that's been set up there and people bringing flowers and people bringing food to the first responders and, so on and so forth and just taking care of each other. This is a city that takes care of its people. You know, there's a real sense here of, we take care of our own, like the Bruce Springsteen song. And there's really been an outpouring of that here, Michael. It really makes you proud to live here and to see the way people, although I suspect most communities would act like that. But I think there's a special bond here, and especially in this neighborhood, that has gone from being a predominantly Jewish neighborhood to being a neighborhood that's now maybe 50% Jewish and Asian and many other ethnic groups in it.
Benny, thanks for this report. I appreciate your time today. I know you went through a lot this weekend, but attend the vigils for me, please, if you can, on my behalf, and we'll talk again soon, all right?
Well, let's talk soon, Michael. Take care of yourself, my friend.
New York Vinny Ricchici, my pal from Pittsburgh, with a special report for us today. It's 12:33. This is The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ. Coming up next, Kevin Strickland and the Energy Dollars Assistance from Chelan Douglas Community Action Council.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
Sharpen in RDO equipment.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:37 in the afternoon, 56 degrees in Wenatchee, sort of a sunny day outside. Meet my very special guests now, Kevin Strickland and Alan Walker from the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. Thanks so much for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Alan, say hello.
Well, good afternoon.
There you go. Now, ladies and gentlemen, there's an opportunity here for us to save some money and also help people who are ill-prepared to face the winter. Tell us about this, Kevin.
Okay, well, Community Action supports the LIHEAP program, which is the Low-Income Home Energy Assistance Program. It's the United States Federal Social Service Program, first established in 1981. The mission of LIHEAP is to assist low-income households, particularly those in the lowest incomes that pay a high proportion of household income for home energy, primarily in meeting their immediate home energy needs.
And how do people take advantage of this program? First of all, they have to know about it, so we're telling them about it now.
Certainly. We're working really hard to get the information out into the community. Most simply, you can just give us a call, 662-6156. We set up an appointment. We're able to tell you what sort of documentation you'll need to bring in.
You have to prove income, right?
You have to prove income for
residency.
Residency, that's correct. Yeah, everybody who's going to be calculated has to have a Social Security card. Yeah.
Okay. And Alan, this is not the only program that's helping people through this winter.
That's right. We have more than one going on right now, Michael. Well, this one goes on year-round. The energy assistance program is more seasonal for wintertime assistance, but the weatherization program that we offer, we have a crew that will come in and run a diagnostic on homes, primarily for low-income people. We really try to target seniors, people with disabilities, or families with young children. We do about 12 or 15 homes a year, and they will come in and run a diagnostic test on the home to look for air leaks, ways to improve it, and depending on what they find, they'll come in and do insulation. They might do window or door replacement, furnace upgrades, ceiling cracks, all kinds of improvements to make a home a little warmer in the
There's a lot of way for the heat to get out in wintertime.
Lots of ways. And these guys are true professionals. They come in and run a test on the home to determine where those leaks are at.
And Alan, is there a cost for this, the diagnostic and also the work?
There is no cost. It is a income-based program, so it's for primarily low-income individuals. Like I said, we try to target seniors and people with disabilities. They also do some health and safety improvements to the home whenever possible. Just try to make homes a little better and a little safer for everyone.
And for someone to qualify for this, how many homes do you think you do in a year? How many people do qualify for this type of help?
We do about 15 homes a year. Average a little bit more than one a month. But we have a small crew. It's a two-man crew, three-man crew that goes out and works on these homes. So. But they are doing those 12 to 15 homes every year and knocking them off one by one.
Now, how did you come to this conclusion that this type of work was worthy to do and you have the financial support to carry it out in winter for the heating and for the rest of the year for the heat conservancy?
Sure. Well, with the weatherization program specifically, it started in around 1970. So there's been 7 million plus homes across the country that have been able to take advantage of this program.
So it's a national program.
It's a national program, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's been going on a long time. We've been doing it here locally. Oh, gosh, Michael, I'm not sure. Probably a couple decades at least.
Back into the mists of time.
Yeah, back into the mists of time. The dawn of Wenatchee, we started weatherizing homes. How's that?
Kevin Strickland, the idea about energy assistance for a heating program extends itself to all forms of heat. I see even wood, oil, propane, natural gas, whatever your source of heat may be.
Yeah, that's correct. We want to meet you where your needs are. And so I most frequently work with electricity, but, I mean, however you heat your home, we're there to help you.
Let's take electricity as an example. Okay. How would you aid someone if they qualified in terms of residency and their income? What would be the steps to take?
Okay, so basically when they'll come in, they'll have the proof of residency, their income over the last 3 months, and then we'll take from whatever their heating source is, we'll take a year's report. We run that through a formula and find out how much of your energy costs are going towards heating. And then according to a formula that we run, it'll tell you what percentage of that we'll pay or we'll help you with.
So you don't pay the whole bill? You don't just...
Oh, no. No, we don't pay for all the electricity. We're focused mainly on the heating costs.
And the same for if they're heating with wood or propane?
Right. Sometimes it's hard to get a whole year's record of what they've paid. So we have backups that are set up for us as part of the program to help us come up with an average.
Now, Alan just talked about how he has a crew of two men to do like 15 houses a year. Do you have a crew that's similar in its might?
Well, we have a three-person crew, not including our department head. We're all experienced. We've been there for a couple of years. We're bilingual, and we're actually under some really good leadership right now with our new department manager. She's just top-notch. So.
Now, this is for both Douglas and Chelan County.
Correct.
And if we're talking about wood heating, perhaps we're talking about some of the more rural areas. They're qualified as two?
Right. And with wood, it's We like the person that we're helping usually has somebody that they go through where they know the wood is good, that the amount is correct, and that sort of thing. So we work with them.
They're getting a right kind of wood that'll burn well.
Mm-hmm. We want them to be able to use their choice of wood and where they get it.
Someone might, as I originally imagined, this would be more of an urban downtown Wenatchee sort of a program, but that's not the case. Anywhere in the county qualifies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Anywhere
in the counties, you bet. Yeah, and like I said, we're trying to get the word out, and we're looking for any help we can get from people who might be listening.
Now, some people might not be that familiar with the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. Besides the helping with conserving heat and the helping with the costs of heating a home, what else does the community do?
Well, good question, Michael. So Community Action Council, we have probably 10 or 12 different programs that we operate outside of the energy assistance and weatherization. We also provide literacy, adult literacy classes and coursework. We manage the community center. We have the food distribution center for all of Chelan and Douglas County. So all the independent little food pantries that are operating once a week or once a month or daily, we provide them with all their food, basically all their food.
Where do you get it?
Most of our food comes from reclaimed grocery stores at the national level, grocery store reclaimed food.
That's
a little
great.
Bit of it is federal food, but most of it is grocery store food that is not able to be sold. And so there are a couple of entities in the state that do the bulk of the collecting of that. And then we do local pickup as well with local grocery stores here in town.
Some people might not be aware of how much food is thrown away from one single grocery store. Just by policy, they look at it and say, well, this is going to be bad in 2 days, out it goes.
It's going to be bad. Unfortunately, about 40% of food is tossed at a national level.
And so it could be, it's perfectly good and could be used.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so you guys rescue that. I mean, it must amount to tons.
It does. We do about 1 million pounds a year just here in Chelan and Douglas County.
Wow.
So there's a lot of food that goes through our center here.
And it goes to the food banks that you just mentioned.
It does, yes. There are 10 or 12 different food banks in the area that we provide food to on a regular basis.
Now, that in itself is a major program. How do you do that, managing all the food?
That is a huge program, and there are two guys that do all of that for us.
Really?
Yes, and they work very hard. It's two full-time, then they have one additional part-time. He works 8, 10, 12 hours a week. But for the most part, it's two fellas that gather up all the food and distribute it, like I said, throughout Chelan and Douglas County. It's a full-time job. They're in Mansfield and Chelan and Rock Island and Leavenworth and Cashmere and Wenatchee. They're all over the place.
You know some of the stores that are contributing?
Yes. Costco, Fred Meyer, Safeway, Target.
Excellent.
That's the bulk of them. Yes.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks to those stores for using their noodle.
Absolutely.
As they say. Yeah. My father always told me to use my noodle, and of course I was too dumb to know what he meant. But now I'm getting a grip on it.
I can't forget, we also get donuts from Glaze. Every week we pick up...
Say that again?
Donuts from Glaze. Yes.
Thank you.
Good to the soul.
Be right back after these words. My very special guests are Kevin Strickland and Alan Walker, not Alan Douglas. Who's Alan Douglas?
I'm not sure.
I think he was a rock producer.
He was a rock and roll star, I'm pretty sure.
I always revert to my disc jockey days. Alan Walker and Kevin Strickland from the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. We'll be back after these words.
You're listening to The Agenda. The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 12:52. This is The Agenda. We broadcast every day from 12:15 to 1 o'clock. My very special guests are Kevin Strickland and Alan Walker. They're from the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. And guys, I just want to thank you for doing something good.
The
news has been kind of grim for the past week or two. So I salute you. Standing ovation. You've done something good. Even a small portion of good is welcome on a day like the ones we've had. So tell us again, Kevin. Let's start at the top and explain how people can get some help with their energy costs.
Okay, so through Chelan Douglas Community Action Council, you can apply for LIHEAP assistance. LIHEAP stands for Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. It provides funding assistance to low-income houses, targeting those who are most vulnerable, disabled, elderly, families with preschool kids.
And they contact you at the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council, correct?
That's correct, and call 509-662-6156.
And Alan, what else is going on that we need to know?
What else? Oh, lots of things going on you need to know. We'll see what we can get through here. The weatherization program is running strong. So if folks are out there and their utility bill that Kevin's trying to help them pay for, it just keeps going up and up. We might be able to help them out with some insulation, window, door, ceiling, and things like that to reduce those electric bills.
Kevin Strickland and Alan Walker from the Chelan Douglas Community Action Council. You think that the world is going to hell in a handbasket? Here's two guys that are doing something worthwhile. I thank you both for that.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
It's 1254. This is News Radio 560 KPQ.